My name is Ray Archuleta. I have worked for the Natural Resource Conservation Service. I'm a retired employee. I worked for him for 32 years. Started as a conservation engineer technician for 7 years, 5 years of doing irrigation, an irrigation water quality specialist, area agronomist, district conservationist, and then now at the end of my career, I was a soil health specialist. So I've worked in 4 different states. So from New Mexico, Missouri, Oregon, and finished my career in, 10, 12 years in North Carolina, and then finished my career back in Missouri and Louisiana and Arkansas and Mississippi.
Ray, you're going to be coming to Southeast Minnesota early next week to speak at a soil health workshop. My question for you is twofold. As far as what you have planned to talk about and how you customize what you talk about to the region that you'll be in, because obviously Southeast Minnesota, Minnesota in general, water quality is huge right now. You get into more contours as you move closer to the Mississippi, so I assume you factor that all in when you recognize the region that you're going to be speaking in.
I do, Mark, but I also, it's kind of interesting how our education system always looks for a delineation of every ecoregion. Like for if I speak to farmers in Iowa, well, they'll tell me, well, Iowa's different from Missouri and from Minnesota, and those are true. But they also forget they all have something very common. There's commonality. There's biology and ecology. The soil works through biology and ecology. So all these regions, every part of the world, all the soils have living biology. And they work by the same common principles. So I talk to them about, yes, the distinct differences, but I also talk about the incredible commonality. And so that's incredibly important. And by the way, a majority of our country have water quality issues. We've been doing conservation for 85 years or more within RCS when it first started. And yet sediment is still the number one water quality problem in the country. So it's not just Minnesota, but it's Wisconsin, Iowa, and the Chesapeake, and many parts of the Midwest.
So you're connecting these similarities, and I'm sure that to a farmer, they would tell you that they want to take care of the environment. They also want to produce a good crop so that they can make money. And so with your presentation, are you able to say that they could have their cake and eat it too?
Absolutely. I think when after about 8 years of college and university studying, I think I realized in the last 4 or 5 years, our education and our agriculture was built on the wrong premise. And what I mean by that is that I was taught in school is how to control, force, manipulate, how to till, how to control it with pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, insecticides, and tillicide. I was taught that I control the ecosystem, that I force it so that I can get more yield, that I can control it. That was begging for the wrong premise. What I teach now and what I've learned to understand is I teach producers how to emulate nature, how to understand it, how to tap into its synergies, into its complementaries, how it works together, and how to nurture it, how to have relationship, and in other words, understand that we're part of that relationship with the soil ecosystem, and it's the most complex ecosystem on the planet. So what I teach producers, that it's alive, and that if you work with it, you do get a better crop. You do get better nutrient cycling. You get better water cycling. You capture more sun. You lower all your inputs. The issue is that we have been working against it and not working with it.
So farmers hear that, and I would think that most would agree, that sounds really good, but how do I make it happen? How do I implement these practices? How do I do that and times are tough financially for farmers, so you have to factor that in as well. So trying to make this realistic on the farm. How do you do that, Ray?
Well, it's interesting. I always get those. In fact, our soil health, the soil health movement, ecological farming is actually growing, and it usually grows under the most severe times. See, people don't change unless they're forced. That's human nature. And it's interesting how, well, says, well, how is that practical? Well, practically, right off the top of the bat, when a person converts from, let's keep this in mind, a lot of our infrastructure, a lot of our construct was based on a very heavy input system. Large tractors, lots of fuel, lots of tillage, lots of chemistry that is runs on ancient sunlight, which is diesel, oil, natural gas. Our system, our construct, our economics, our whole system is based on that foundation. So what we do with producers, the first thing I do is we have to go through an incredible paradigm shift. One, that the soil is alive, this dynamic system is alive. When a farmer truly understands it, it changes the way they look at the system. They look at the whole soil and they look at the farm. And until that first happens, you can't go to the next phases. And when I work with a producer, we first, you know, typically I love walking in the fields and with a shovel and I show them, look how you're diminished and destroyed your soil. So I teach them those things in our schools and our classes. But then one of the first things we do is we use diversity. I take farmers where they're at. And it's very critical that a lot of this has to do with social and cultural issues, spiritual issues, scientific issues, all these together, working together. So you don't walk into a community, you don't walk into a producer, you're walking into a world. When I work with a producer, you have to understand their context. So you start from where they're at and then be able to inculcate diversity, like put in a cover crop. It's probably the simplest thing a producer can do. And then I also try and see if I can get them to stop the tillage and start incorporating more no-till into their operation. That could be done, especially covers is very easy. Whether you're tilling or not, it's a pretty thing. It's attainable. It's not a difficult thing to do. It just takes a lot of commitment that you're willing to do that.
Yeah, it's been fascinating for me, and you talked about the commonalities that farmers in Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri, and elsewhere all have, but I think about cover crops and tillage in particular, and what is unique about Minnesota, as you move further into the upper Midwest, you have a shorter growing season, and tillage has been very common in this part of the country, but we are seeing more cover crop adoption in Minnesota, too. Is that because there is more known about what types of seeds and types of species can grow at the times that you want them to, that are most effective in this region? Is education really kind of opening the door to some of these things as opposed to, well, it can't work because we're too far north?
Well, I think you're right. I think we have to add to that is that if you look at every farm magazine, no-till magazine, strip-till magazine, the organic magazine, covers, diversity. It permeates the air. And if you don't see them in the magazines, like the John Deere Furrow magazine, it's got a huge, wonderful articles on biology. Because this movement that started 10 years ago, we realized we didn't have it right. We missed the most awesome complex system was the soil ecology, all these arthropods, all these worms and bacteria and fungi and all these living organisms, they're part of the water cycle and they do 90% of the nutrient cycling. Farmers are catching on and they're going to these conferences, they're learning, wow, the soil, if I work with the soil, they produce the nutrients, they do all these things, they'll help control pests and pathogens. So it's been an educational revolution. So I think that's what you're seeing. You're seeing some of that filter. And maybe the neighbors may not be talking. You may see it spottedly through the landscape, but you're seeing that occur even in your region.
Well, Ray, I know there are many other directions we can go, and I do want to save some of that for when I see you in person in Kasson next Thursday. But as far as today's conversation, anything else you want to make sure we touch on?
Well, I think that I think one of the most important things is that I want to tell your listeners is after 20 some years failing as a conservationist, I realized that I missed the most important mark. I missed that the soil, it's not just a growing medium, it's alive. And I think once we convey and the producer understands that it is alive, just as alive as their own pet, and that they'll be more conscious and aware. The thing is, if the producer does not understand how his soil works, not really have a thorough understanding how carbon and nitrogen works and all these organisms, the producer's going to struggle. Look, I went to college for 8 years, and I went into many soil courses, and I did not know how the soil worked. And it's causing great heartache for our producers. And what I want to leave them with, and I want them to think about, our farmers and our producers have, through the years, have always been a group that have suffered more economic losses. Farms losses through the years. You have seen little tiny communities have become actually desiccated. You can see old gas stations, old shoe shops, old bakeries, where it really circled around agriculture, really circled around the farm. Now that wealth has left to corporate America, to all the tools. It has left to people that sell the fungicides, the herbicides, the fertilizers, the chemicals. Not that I'm opposed to those tools. But the wealth went to them, to corporate America. And the wealth should have stayed at the local area, and it should be the farmer is the conduit for the wealth of the community to flow through. And we've lost that because we don't know how to farm in nature's image, how to emulate, how to work with it. And so it's caused inadvertently that the government and all these companies actually control farming. And there's no real freedom for the farmer. And so when people come and listen, they will see a new way to farming that will actually lead to freedom if they're committed, if they're willing to learn. But I will tell you, it's not easy. You have to think. You have to manage. Because farming and ranching is one of the most complex careers a person can attain in the world. Because you have to be an agronomist, you have to be an ecologist, you have to be an accountant, you have to be a mechanical engineer. You have to be all these skill sets in one person and yet have the temperament to be able to tolerate all the perturbations and disturbances of the weather and the climate and the change and insect pressures. So it's a tough job. But I think if they come, I think they'll learn quite a bit.